Welcome, everybody, to the episode 58 of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Host today, Marty Jones, capably and expertly produced and edited by Owen Woods. And with me as guests today are Adam Moore, Supervisory Forester for the Colorado State Forest Service in Alamosa, Jamie Larson, who is with the United States Forest Service as a Fire Mitigation and Prevention Specialist. She is also Chair of the SLV Wildfire Council, and Chief Matt Nolting from the Colorado Division of Fire and Prevention Control, who is also the Vice Chair of the SLV Wildfire Council. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for the music that you hear during the podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. Well, welcome to Adam and Jamie and Matt. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. So we're going to begin. I'd like to ask Jamie to give a brief overview of the SLV Wildfire Council.
Sure. It will be brief because I know Adam will have more to flesh out. The San Luis Valley Wildfire Council, I guess, really strives to connect communities and different agencies, partnerships, cooperators, et cetera, in wildfire preparedness and mitigation practices, and also generate kind of a multi-jurisdictional project list of some sort, like moving forward and implementing mitigation measures across private, public, land, things of that nature. I know Adam can give a very eloquent summary.
Yeah, so a brief, in 2018, a bunch of partners, a very similar group as in the Wildfire Council now, helped host Community Planning Assistance for Wildfires, which is a program of Headwaters Economics that looks at planning aspects, in particular land use planning, to reduce wildfire risks. And one of the recommendations that they had was that we should continue the partnership by forming a wildfire council. And we started making some strides, and then COVID hit, and it went to the back burner since we weren't meeting. And then in fall of 22, we started collaborating and meeting a little bit more. Part of that was from Colorado Division of Fire Prevention and Control taking a big push on that. And then in 2023, we really formalized and started meeting about six times a year and came up with some goals and objectives and a little bit of a work plan, and have been slowly moving forwards as partners.
And Matt, what else would you like to add to that?
I think Adam did a very good job. It's just a great group. I see the attendees are local cooperating fire, sheriff, local jurisdictions, state jurisdictions such as Forest Service, or not jurisdictions, agencies, and then our federal partners from Forest Service, BLM.
And this covers the entire San Luis Valley, all six counties, is that right?
Correct, all six counties, with representation from the counties coming via their fire protection district or via their emergency managers.
And about how many people attend these council meetings on a regular basis?
That seems to fluctuate, and it seems like I've only been at the last two meetings, and I want to say that would probably be around 12 to 20, but it sounds like over the winter you've had some larger meetings with 40 plus people.
So it's a pretty good sized group. Lots of activities, I'm sure, going on. What kind of areas has the Wildfire Council identified as focus areas in the Rio Grande National Forest and the San Luis Valley? And the San Juan National Forest, too.
We're generally not looking at the Forest Service areas. Their teams are doing that. It's more of the non-federal land. A lot of the conversations that we've discussed, a lot of conversations have been around the river corridors. They're usually a big concern of wildfire from the local agencies, sheriff's office, emergency manager, fire chiefs. And then we found some other areas throughout the valley that we've You've either had conversations, presentations at their little town halls or whatever they host.
Yeah, one thing I would add is that in 2023 and into 2024, we actually had a big map printed, and we went around, we rotate the meetings at each of the six counties, and we asked partners to circle areas on the map that they thought were high wildfire concern areas or areas that we should do education or look at having some type of fuels project to reduce the wildfire risk. So for example, and I'll just give a couple of these for each county, like Matt said, River Corridor, and that covers Alamosa, Rio Grande County, up in the Mineral County some. In Rio Grande County, we also have a big area of concern around South Fork because there's a lot of homes that intermix with natural vegetation and what we refer to as the wildland-urban interface. In Mineral County, we had Wagon Wheel Gap Estates area, and there's some other communities near there. Down Conejos County, we have the whole 17 corridor down Conejos River where a lot of people go for fly fishing. And then in Castilla County, we know there's a lot of communities of concern there, but the bigger concern for the emergency manager was some of these small towns like Chama and San Francisco that haven't seen as much education on their wildfire concerns. And then in Sawatch, we have the big area of Baca Crestone and then up towards Bonanza as well. So large variety of areas across the San Luis Valley. And then we also, spearheaded by the U.S. Forest Service, are in the process of finishing this mapping exercise called PODS.
Yes, PODS, that'll be a process. I don't think we're quite to the finishing stages. I think that'll take the rest of the year, but PODS are potential operational delineation lines. And big picture, if you look at a map, it's really rivers, ridges, and roads. Those are typically good places to hold fire. So Adam and Matt and the fuels planner for the Rio Grande got together down along with Scott Nielsen of the BLM and kind of drew some lines on a map in addition to what was drawn, I believe, in 2019, which was kind of a real surface level attempt to say, hey, if we have a large fire here and we have an incoming incident management team that's going to take over the fire, here are some areas they can look at to focus their suppression actions, whether that's further out from the fire or closer to communities. So the next steps of that are really going to be having in-depth conversations with emergency county managers, district rangers, sheriffs, public health, and anybody who really has information to offer regarding values at risk, so communities, where people are, and watersheds and things of that nature.
So I know that the San Luis Valley is typically considered to be from the state line further to the north, but those of us who live in the valley kind of consider New Mexico to be at least northern New Mexico to be a part of the valley also. Do you get any attendees from northern New Mexico on the Wildfire Council?
We haven't reached out to them yet. One of the questions we're constantly asking ourselves at all the meetings is, do we have the right partners at the room? Are we getting the feedback we need to hear partners, areas of concern and areas of risk from wildfire? So that's a very good point. In the future, reaching out to New Mexico and coworkers that we have down there would be useful. But I would say we're still in that developing phase of making sure we have everybody we want at the table.
Very good. So can you guys talk a little bit about the health of the forests and the watersheds and areas of concerns right now in the San Luis Valley, especially given the snowpack from this winter?
Yeah, I know the San Luis Valley is in a persistent drought. When you look at the southern part of the forest, Conejos Peak Ranger District, that area, they've gone from moderate to severe to extreme, and the beetle activity has increased. I think it was a month or so ago that they were out with some entomologists, and the entomologists for the Forest Service were pretty surprised by what they were seeing. there's more activity.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, and then as you move north, it's less in Sawatch's, I think, moderate for the most part, and persistent drought still for the valley. And then, of course, as you guys all know, the Songrays are very, very dry. So there's always concerns with drought. And then I think for this year and ongoing, warming temps are always a concern. I know the predictive services for this area this year show normal significant potential for fire and then the above average temps, but it's supposed to be normal to above average for monsoonal flow, which, fingers crossed, is what happens.
Yeah, we could certainly use that. We've had very little in the way of monsoon activity the last couple of years, so having a quote normal unquote monsoon would be really pretty wonderful. So, well, what can you guys tell us about how households should be prepared for a wildfire?
I highly suggest looking at the available material out there through the emergency managers, State Forest Service, other partners like that that have suggestions on your emergency go kits, whatever you want to call them. Evacuation is always one of the big concerns and problems that we face for wildfires. So making sure that you have everything ready for you and your family when that time comes. And then also the local and just the suggested mitigation stuff, knowing that mitigation could be hard on some people physically, but, you know, a little bit of work in hardening your home and your property goes a long way to defend your house in case a wildfire does come.
And what are the areas of greatest risk in terms of the urban wildland interface? For example, I live in Alamosa. I'm not really too concerned with my house. I'm a little concerned about the riparian park, but where should people really focus their concerns and efforts?
I was going to say, that's a very good question, Marty, and it's very timely with us getting towards the end of May, with May being Wildfire Awareness Month. And typically when we're looking at somebody's house, is we divide it into zones. So an area closest to the house, the first 5 feet, that's the area where you want to have the least amount of flammable material. So whether that's landscaping, like junipers or lilac bushes, or buildup of debris such as leaves or your firewood on your deck. And then you'd want to go out to what we call zone two, which is 5 to 30 feet, where you can have some good landscaping, you can have some vegetation in there, but we want to have it minimal. And then zone three is 30 to 100 feet, where you can have a little bit more vegetation. But the idea there is that you have a lot of canopy separation so that the trees aren't touching each other for there to be an active crown fire. And we have a lot of good information on our website about that. And then there's the Live Wildfire Ready campaign as well that has a lot of nice pointed information. And living here in town does not make you immune to wildfires. As we saw in 2022 with the fire in Monte Vista. And then we also know that most houses are actually lost in wildfires to embers flying from quarter mile, half mile, miles away. And so landing in those nooks and crannies, those leaf litter buildups in the gutter places are really important areas of fuels mitigation that any homeowner can do, even living in a town.
And you mentioned a couple of websites. Can you give us addresses?
Livewildfireready.org is probably the quickest and easiest one to remember, or you can just Google Colorado State Forest Service and look at our tab that has wildfire mitigation on there.
And does the National Forest Service also have a link?
We have links to the Colorado State Forest Service, okay, or FireWise. The FireWise program is something that I think most folks proximal to federal land are familiar with, but Live Wildfire Ready is a really great site.
Okay, so that's a good site to get reliable information. What about in the heat of the moment, so to speak? If a fire is existing, within 10 miles or so. Where do people turn to get the information they need to stay safe?
Well, I think one good place to start is registering with your county 911 notification system. So I know if you go to, I believe it's SLVE911, you can sign up for the Greater San Luis Valley notification system, and then you can go to your county and get those notifications.
And that's a kind of a reverse 911?
I know I have them for my house that sits in a rural drainage in central Washington, and I'll get notifications about weather warnings, severe storms, and proximal fires.
So that brings up the idea of the warning. You know, we commonly hear on weather forecasts, red flag warning and drought and things of that sort. What do we need to really pay attention to if we're under a red flag warning?
All of it. Usually that means there are a lot of things that have come into alignment. You know, high temperatures, low RHs, significant winds.
What's an RH?
Oh, sorry, relative humidity. My bad, sorry.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Used to a million acronyms. Dry receptive fuels. So when you hear that, I like to tell people, especially my friends that are working on projects, hey, maybe it's not a good idea to weld outside. Not a great time to go ahead and rake all your stuff into a pile and burn it. You think you can, oh, it's no big deal. I can get this done and it won't be an issue. And remind people, you know, if you're dragging your not dragging, but you shouldn't be dragging your boat or UTVs, but if you're towing your trailer somewhere, you're looking at your chains, make sure you're not dragging anything there.
One that I would never have thought of.
Oh, that starts a lot of fires. It's real fun to chase them off the side of the road. Yes, and that and not checking tire pressure and then having a tire that goes flat, or maybe you had a worn tire and it comes off the rim, and then next thing you know, you've started a couple fires along the highway, and you're going to see his folks out there along with all the volunteers. And
is there anything else that you guys want to talk about either for the May Fire Prevention Month, or what was it? The wildfire?
Yeah.
May is what month again, Adam?
May is the fifth month of the year, Marty.
Thank you very much.
National Wildfire Preparedness Month.
Wildfire Preparedness Month.
I do have one go back. You were talking about the difference of being prepared or worried about wildfire in the city versus in the county. Another good shout out to the State Forest Services. They have a mapping software, and Adam could go into it more. They've spent a lot of time on it, and it actually shows some of the hazard areas of the county of the San Luis Valley, and shows some of those higher risk areas due to the imaging and all the smart people stuff that they did behind the scene. And that's just off your website as well, right?
Yeah, if you go to our website and you look towards the bottom, it's called COWRA. It stands for Colorado Wildfire Risk Assessment. And there's 15 or 20 different layers that looks at what your fire danger might be, whether you're more likely to have an active crown fire or a ground fire, whether the fire is going to move really fast or really slow. So yeah, it's a great resource for landowners, and thanks for reminding me about it, Matt.
So I'm going to ask about mitigation just a little bit more, Jamie, since you're a specialist in mitigation and prevention. For folks who are interested in doing more mitigation, how do they get in touch with you, and what sorts of things can you be of assistance with?
Well, I know the Colorado State Forest Service goes around and you guys do assessments for people as they request.
Yeah, we can individually meet with landowners and look at their property and look at their house and give an assessment and tell them what they can do to reduce their wildfire risk. Our preference, though, is to meet with an entire community. So have a community help organize an activity, have us come in, meet with them, show them some of the fuels concerns, because that way we can reach 15 or 20 people in the same time it would take us to reach just one. And we also very often will go meet at HOAs at their annual meetings and give them an overview of their wildfire risk. And you can reach out to us at 719-587-0915.
Okay.
And I'm available by email. It would just be my name, jamie.larson@usda.gov.
And Jamie is spelled J-A-M-I. No E on the end.
No, the E's in Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N, not the O. But yeah, and I'm more than willing to go out and engage with folks. It's something I've done in the past on their forests I've worked on. So typically it's a wave to someone and then it ends up in a conversation about, hey, what can I do in my house? What do you think? Are there things I can mitigate? Is there something I should be doing differently? Is this bark mulch I love a problem? Mm.
And Matt, how do people get in touch with you? And for what reason might they get in touch with you?
The easiest way to get a hold of any DFPC, Division of Fire Prevention and Control representative, is go to our website. You just Google DFPC. I'm under the Wildland Fire Management section. So it shows the section that has all of our fire and life safety folks, the people that do all the fire inspections throughout the state. Then it has our training qualifications and then our wildland. We do the same thing. We try not to get too much into the mitigation one-on-one conversations because that's what our partners are for, and we try to move the conversation to the most appropriate person. But we do go out and do the HOA conversations, public education events, stuff like that. The other way to get a hold of me is my email, and it's matt.nolting@state.co.us, and I could answer questions about wildland firefighting, mutual aid systems, more of the 911 side.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you all for joining us. Any last words before we wrap this up?
I have one go back.
Okay.
I guess what I've seen is, and I guess I've been with the Forest Service since 2004 in fire, and one of the biggest obstacles is people being unfamiliar with stages or levels of evacuation. Ready, set, go, essentially. Level one is get ready, level two, get set, and level three is go. So I guess I'd just like to remind people to be familiar with that language and have a plan. Oftentimes, it's the last thing you expect you're going to do, and think about what you want to take with you and what you need to have with you. Hopefully that's not an issue here this summer, right? But we teach kids to do fire school or fire drills in school, right? But right. As we become adults, we kind of take it for granted. Oh, I'll just know what to do. It'll all work out. I call 911. Well, for rural communities in the wildland urban interface, that is, you don't get an immediate response, right? Usually folks have to travel from a distance to get to you. And yeah, I just like to remind people to have a plan.
Excellent. Excellent advice. Well, thank you all for joining us on the podcast. Our guests today have been Adam Moore from the Colorado State Forest Service, Jamie Larson from the United States Forest Service, and Matt Nolting from the Colorado Division of Fire and Prevention Control. These are all members of the San Luis Valley Wildfire Council, encouraging you all to be prepared, get ready in case a fire breaks out. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll be right back with some outdoor conditions for May.
Hey everyone, this is Hannah Eubanks with the Valley Calendar Update. Here are the events you can look forward to this week. Tuesday evening, head to the Boyd Community Garden for the Veggie Community Garden Night from 5 to 7. On Thursday at the Sky High Complex is the Landowner Weed Management Workshop. This workshop will allow landowners to learn more about common weed varieties and management methods. The workshop is from 3 to 5. Friday evening at 7:30 p.m., there is a Gone with the West concert at Society Hall. Saturday morning at 8:30, there's a wildlife safari at the Toyville Mom Trailhead in Alamosa. At Casablanca Park on Saturday, there is a Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Awareness Walk and Concert starting at 1 p.m. If you have an event coming up, submit it to the Valley Calendar. Head to the Valley Calendar page on alamosacitizen.com, click online form, and give us the details. That'll do for now. Have a great week.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. May was kind to the upper Rio Grande Basin by delivering a bit more than 2 inches of precipitation. The temperatures are rising as June makes its debut. It's a month where 80 degrees is fairly normal. A year ago, the month of June also delivered 2 inches of rain in what was a rainy summer overall in 2024. Will it repeat itself this year? I guess we'll just have to wait and see. This is our first opportunity to give a fishing report. Fish it up in June is the advice we're getting, given the light snowpack runoff in 2025. Some of the small streams could be very fishable by the first week of June, and the second week of June should be a great year for dry flies because the lower flows mean that more fish will rise to the dry flies. Look for those big salmon flies to be out early and in bigger abundance, then follow them with some big mayflies. On the lower Arkansas basin from Arc Anglers, the flows are again on the rise due to snow melt. Visibility is diminishing across the full Arkansas basin. The lower basin is still fishable, but you can expect clarity to deteriorate significantly during the Memorial Day weekend and first week of June. As flows increase, the river will scour more and more dirt from the banks. The water temperature will decrease as more snowmelt enters the system. As flows rise, trout vacate faster areas of current and move to velocity shelters along the banks and amid submerged midstream structures. Fish that drop into the depths are harder to reach, but the fish along the banks are prime targets for a shallow nymph or a dry dropper rig. We advise wade anglers to fish from shore whenever possible, and to avoid wading in water where you can't see the river bottom. Very good advice from Arc Anglers. From the Conejos River Anglers, the flows on the lower Conejos are around 690 CFS. The lower river is fishing mostly with stones and some mayfly nymphs. The flows out of Platoro are about 140 CFS. Worm patterns and smaller mayfly nymphs have made the early fishing on the Conejos great. And now some additional news. Governor Jared Polis was in San Luis on Tuesday for the signing of House Bill 25-1023. It's the legislation that gives local governments oversight on fencing projects like the 8-foot-tall fence around the Cielo Vista Ranch. From San Luis, the governor made his way to Alamosa to meet with local farmers and ranchers about the impacts they're seeing on increased costs. The Boys and Girls Club of the San Luis Valley has officially opened the Hub, Nonprofit Innovation Collaborative, on the corner of 6th and San Juan in Alamosa. As a part of the Hub's newest addition, we have an outdoor gear library. The gear library is filled with all the necessary gear to have successful, safe outdoor adventures. Rain jackets, tents and sleeping bags, stand-up paddle boards, bikes, and more will eventually be available to the public. At the very beginning, the gear will be utilized for Generation Wild's programs and outdoor adventure programming for the Boys and Girls Club. Later this summer, we hope the gear library will be open for the public. We'll have more on this later in June when we're joined by the Gen Wild coordinator, Brian Pucciarella. And now a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The San Luis Valley chapter of Trout Unlimited hosts its annual Spring Fling Social and Fundraiser Saturday, May 31st from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Colorado Farm Brewery in Alamosa. That's at 2070 County Road 12 South, essentially the intersection of Road 102 and Road 12 South. Join us for an evening of fun, food, and festivities as we celebrate conservation and community. The family-friendly event will feature prize drawings, a few live auction items with a youth auctioneer, a fly casting contest, a guess the number of flies contest, and, of course, Gosser sausage sizzling on site. It's a great chance to meet fellow anglers, support local youth programs, and enjoy a beautiful spring evening at the brewery.
The San Luis Valley Rattlers mountain biking team is hosting their annual Ride with a Rattler Day for middle school and high school students who are interested in trying mountain biking as an activity or sport. Join the Rattlers at the Limekiln Trailhead just west of Monte Vista on Saturday, June 7th at 10 a.m. to see what mountain biking is all about. Team riders and coaches will orient students to their bikes and lead rides based on skill level. Take a short ride and experience the thrill of climbing, single-track riding, and navigating small obstacles. Team up with other students that have a love for the outdoors and learn skills that will last a lifetime. You may even be tempted to join the team. They'll finish the day with a hot dog bar. The Rattlers have a limited number of team bikes and helmets available for use. More details are available at www.slvmbt.com. And the San Luis Valley Habitat for Humanity is sponsoring its annual fundraiser bike ride, Bike to Build, on June 28th. You can ride a couple of different distances. Road bikes are probably better suited for this rather than the mountain bikes, but the two possible distances are a 26 to 27 mile ride and a metric century around 62 to 64 miles. Again, June 28th, you can register for the ride by visiting the San Luis Valley Habitat for Humanity website and click on the link for Bike to Build. And that ends this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced and edited by Owen Woods and published by AlamosaCitizen.com. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. And again, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. This is Marty Jones, the host, saying thank you for joining us on the podcast, and take advantage of this great weather we're having. Get outside, enjoy the time out of doors.